Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational, educational purposes only.
Welcome back to Drugs... No, I can't do it like that. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our code is ADVICES. And if you use that at checkout, you will let them know that you support what we are doing over here. Dave Crossland, we're catching you in the evening time today. We're off our track today. How's it going, man?
I'm good, mate. Good, mate. Just a busy week, actually. A bit of a mad one this week. So I'm definitely very much running around chasing my tail all bloody week.
Oh, that's not a good feeling.
Well, it's better to be busy than to be doing nothing, I suppose. But I got called into a job at the racecourse training school today, a drug presentation job.
Okay, yeah. No, we talked a little bit about this before we got started. I was surprised. So first of all, jockeys and drugs. Are these performance-enhancing drugs, or what are we talking about that jockeys are into? Because initially I thought, are you talking about using steroids for horses? But no, we're talking about the jockeys, right?
Yeah, well, it's jockeys and staff in general. So today was a training course for secretaries. So they'll go back to their individual riding racing clubs. And they tend to be very much a central point within a working stable.
Okay.
So they see a lot of what goes on. Mm. So they're in a very good to advise and intercept. So we have a large amount of narcotic use in the way of particularly cocaine.
Oh, wow.
Now, part of that's to do with the social side of horses,
okay,
the money element and that side of it. Part of that is obviously it's a stimulant, and they use it for weight management.
Because a jockey is going to need to stay X amount of pounds, like lighter the better, I assume.
Yes. So obviously, fat burners are very common within jockeys.
Wow.
But what I didn't know was, which I found quite amusing but quite interesting, was obviously the jockeys and the horses are all drug tested before they race.
Oh, really? Huh.
Jockeys are also tested for alcohol.
Okay.
And jockeys will sometimes fail the alcohol test because they've drunk the day before.
Oh, yeah.
The limit is lower, I think, than that of the drink drive limit in the UK.
Huh, okay.
So if they've got a weekend race meet or a four-day race meet, they've won the first race, they've celebrated because the horse has won,
yeah,
they quite often will turn up the next day to race and not be allowed to race. But it does happen. They'll not be allowed to race because their alcohol blood levels are too high.
Okay.
But they've been failing horses on cocaine.
No kidding. Wait, what? Horses? The horses themselves?
Yes.
Are they, they're bumping lines with the jockeys before they...
No, it's cross-contamination. The tests are that sensitive that the cokie's getting onto the horses through the jockeys pissing in the actual stables
and
contaminating
wow.
the area, or the jockeys sweating on the horse and it passing from skin to skin. Just contrasted from it being on their hands and them touching the horses. So, yeah, they have had cases of horses with cocaine in the bloodstream.
We need to teach these jockeys how to manage their cocaine. If they have enough on their hands, like, they're not doing this right. You could get them a mirror, credit card.
The thing is, these tests are incredibly sensitive. I mean, I was shocked. They had a case, and this was a genuine case. They had a couple of horses failed for ketamine.
No kidding.
Now, so ketamine's a big horse tranquilizer. So you're thinking straight away, why would you dope a horse with a tranquilizer before a race?
Right.
Or is it because it's injured and they're trying to cover the injury up?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So they did a big investigation, and it turned turned out it was the stable hands that were nicking ketamine out of the vet stores on the stables, using it on themselves. But because they'd been pissing in the stables, which is commonplace on a yard.
Okay.
So they'd been pissing the straws in the stable. The horses had been contaminated by the piss that they were pissing that was full of ketamine.
Wow. Huh. That's crazy, man. I wonder how they figured that out finally. Because had to be a lot of positives before they came up with this solution.
I think they backtracked. Well, I think some of it was potentially the owners as well, because obviously the owner of that horse is like, well, who's doped my horse with ketamine? Because they know.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're trying to hide this from the officials. They openly want to know what's gone on.
Yeah.
So first case would be, well, let's check the stables and see if we can find ketamine in the stables. And they did urine sample tests. And this, that, and the other, and they came back in the urine with ketamine, but it wasn't horse piss, it was human.
That makes sense, then. That makes sense.
So then they tested the stable lads and found out they'd been nicking ketamine out of the stores.
I want to imagine, too. So you said you were with secretaries for this talk? This wasn't with the jockeys themselves?
Yeah, no, this was secretaries. They do several over the year, so whenever they've got a training batch in, so they've got young jockeys in. Even young stable hands that come in for training courses at this. It's a racing college in Doncaster. It's about 20 minutes down the road from the actual race course.
I was just thinking how fun it would be. I want to see a picture of you and all the jockeys and like you throwing up a double bicep with all these little tiny guys all around you. That's what I want to see.
But yeah, they try and target people that they know will may potentially have influence over young jockeys. Because obviously a lot of lads start jockeys at quite a young age.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, they're exposed to this environment. So they try and hit it from as many different angles as they can to get the education in place about alcohol management and obviously drug management and everything else.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm aware, I mean, hopefully they might change this, but presently they don't do really any direct work on performance enhancers.
No kidding.
It's predominantly alcohol and recreational drug use.
Okay.
So hopefully after today, it might fall into the remit a bit more and we might get some more work doing the performance stuff as well.
That's interesting. It's interesting. I would have never thought of going down this direction with your work either.
It is odd how you get down weird routes certain times. You know, you go to the most unlikely places sometimes.
Yeah.
I once got contacted by an aircraft manufacturer.
Really? Okay.
And that was basically off the back of they'd actually found some used syringes and needles in the changing rooms at work.
Okay.
So obviously somebody at work had shot up and been a bit careless and not disposed of it correctly. So they started a whole education program off the back of that because of basically they're dealing with high-end components that have to be spot on.
Huh.
And ignorance-wise, they were concerned that steroid use was going to affect the competence of their employees.
Sure.
So they did some work with that. I mean, it didn't continue. They soon realized that it didn't really need to continue, but their initial reaction was, right, get some education in, and they start. Well, the other thing is as well, they already had a drug testing program, and they increased that to include steroids.
Okay, that makes sense.
And there is a little bit of a responsibility as an employer that if you test somebody for a substance, you therefore have to provide them with education on that substance.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. It's interesting because it sounded like they really cared. I've never heard anything at any of my workplaces ever about steroid use. And maybe when I did personal training, there was a little bit of talk about that. That they had like a strict policy or, you know, but there was no education. That's for sure. They never brought in Dave Crossland. That's for sure.
The local university has banned steroids on campus.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, here they obviously are because they're illegal, but there.
Not here, but also, but they have, and that came about because they had a student, because they have a gym on campus and they have personal trainers in the gym that are students.
Hmm.
And one of those students was a competitive bodybuilder
who
was, he didn't broadcast the fact that he used, but he also didn't hide it. So if he was asked, he responded, but otherwise he kept it quiet.
Okay.
And they were going to throw him off the course and throw him off the PT in and throw him this, that, and the other. It didn't happen because they didn't have legislation in place to prevent it in the first place. So they can't say you breached the rules when there wasn't a rule there. But the aftermath of that was that the rule got then put in place.
Yeah, you do.
You get into some weird stuff. You get into odd stuff now and again. I mean, the military work's going nuts. I just had a phone call today say that they're thinking they're going to double the budget.
Really? That'd be great for you, right?
Yeah, in one sense, yeah, but the workload's going to be huge.
All right. I've got a topic here. This is going to be an interesting one. Because we mean this with all respect, but while you and I, you know, we were talking earlier today, and I'm gonna put this picture up on the screen. This is a screen cap that I took, and this is from the PCA official Instagram page. This is a disabled guy who is competing. This from, as you can see, PCA official, and the post had said, you know, this is a special situation. This guy has a disability, and he came out to compete. It really brought up some questions because you look at him and I see like, okay, you know, and I want to be great, or I want to be as good as, I'm sorry, we're getting messages here, and I see somebody's commenting. I don't know what he means, but he says great for numbers. Maybe this, I don't know. Anyway, I want to be as like, you know, nice about this as possible, but you know, how can we compare this guy to anybody else? Is it a competition? I mean, bodybuilding is what? It's a competition within ourselves, first of all. That's what it's always supposed to be, right, Dave? So no matter what, we always have that going on.
Yeah, but that's you know, the bettering yourself element of bodybuilding. Step on stage to be competitive against your peers. You're asking to be judged to your peers to a set criteria.
Yeah. Yeah. So how could we compare this guy against somebody else unless that other person had the same issues?
Exactly. I don't know. And you know, it's a very sensitive subject, and some people are probably going to jump up and down and call us every name under the sun. And I just, how do you judge somebody with that level of disability as a bodybuilder? And that, this is nothing about being disabled. This is nothing about what they've achieved and what they've not achieved. But if I don't understand the level of that individual's disabilities and how limiting that is for them to do whatever they do, I have no understanding of what I'm looking at.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going, because I see that and my first thought is like, you know, the politically correct thing is to think like, well, okay, this guy tried really hard. He did it the best he could, you know, so, and I do respect the work that he put in. At the second time, if this is a competition, now I'm confused, you know, and I don't know. I mean,
the other thing is though, and I don't mean, this is going to sound real, I've got to be very careful how I pick my words here. Otherwise, we're going to get a tirade. Snowflake's giving me shit. We don't know, particularly from that picture, and I've seen this in a lot of disabled classes as well, we don't know how limiting that disability is for that individual person. And when you look at a disabled class, you're not told what the individual's problems are. And you really don't know. Yeah, sometimes you are, but I mean, you know, certain people you can look at and say, well, obviously he's got a prosthetic limb, he's lost a leg. Everything else is functioning normal.
Yeah.
So there are no limitations, particularly for that individual, on upper body development.
True.
He's as able-bodied as anybody else.
Yeah.
But you could have someone, and a prime example is Darren Stansby, who has a neurological brain disorder. It's degenerative, his brain function, and therefore his nervous control and his muscle control is slowly going, who has difficulty contracting muscles. So him doing any exercise becomes difficult. But he also has difficulty contracting the muscles in his throat, so he can't swallow solid food.
Okay.
So there's another complication. So that makes his achievements maybe that little bit more achievement, you know, of an achievement.
Yeah.
You can't compare him against a guy who's lost his foot in an accident.
True. Just like you couldn't compare either of those guys to this guy.
No, and it's, you know, it'd be like putting me against a bikini girl.
Yeah.
Just where's the comparison? So it's difficult because you want to encourage everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But at the same time, and this is part of why I fell out with competition bodybuilding and judging, and I, rightly or wrongly, and judge me for it if you want, but I liked bodybuilding when it was only achievable by the few.
Now that's, I think, where, that's where I think that's something, something about what you're saying. That's where I was kind of going to. I don't know. We can all participate and that's fine. And I think we could all celebrate it too. But then the idea of the competition. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't really have many words for this. You're doing a lot better than I am. I saw that and it sparked something for me. It made me think. It made me question. And I guess I don't have any answers. So listening to you, I'm thinking it out a little.
I would also be a little bit uncomfortable because I think there's a danger here as well of exploitation.
Really? How so?
Well, for a federation, they can create a poster boy out of somebody who's got a severe disability.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
To promote themselves as this caring fed.
That's true.
What they're really interested in is just flooding that stage with more bodies because it's more revenue.
Sure. Getting more people in the audience too. Just, yeah, yeah.
It's a tearjerker and it pulls on the emotional heartstrings and you're an absolute bastard who deserves to burn in hell if you don't support it.
Right, right.
All those connotations coming through. I'm very, rightly or wrongly, and I honestly don't know if I should be or I shouldn't be, but I've got very cynical of federations over the years.
Okay.
And the more exposure I've had to all the federations, the more disappointed I am in the various levels of corruption that goes on.
We talked to, I talked to Paul Scarborough a little while ago. We did an episode all about the UK. I didn't know how many federations there were. You know, basically we have one here. We have the NPC. There's a couple random shows that happen in various natural divisions, but there's not much. If you're going to compete, you're going to be an NPC competitor here. You guys have PCA. You have the what else do you have? IFBB.
We have the UKBFF, which is what used to be the IFBB, which is still associated to the IFBB Europe, but okay. Not the IFBB Pro. We have the PCA, which is obviously now knocking on the door of the NPC in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
We have Two Bros, which is the British version of the NPC now.
Oh, okay.
So the Two Bros qualify into the IFBB Pro that's associated with the NPC.
It's called Two Bros?
Two Bro shows, yeah.
I like that.
We have NABBA, which is a long-standing federation, which is what's behind the universe.
I talked to Aaron Hudson about that. Now, NABBA, is that the one that does the one and done all through the show? There's no morning and night show. They just do it all at once?
They tend to do a run through, yes.
That's cool. That's cool. We don't do that here at all.
We have the IBFA, which is more of a grassroots fed.
Okay.
But they have an international circuit. They have a Europeans. They have a world. So they do have an international following. And then there's the NAC, which is very, very, well, it's quite small in the UK, but I believe it's bigger in Europe.
Okay. Yeah, so many to choose from. We don't have those kind of options here. You either compete in the NPC pretty much or you don't compete. That's the way it is.
But, I mean, I know the NPC has got several, more than several lawsuits that have been created to and produced but not actually instigated against unfair judging.
Oh, really? Okay.
And athletes haven't brought the cases forward because they fear retribution for doing so and ruining their career, but they have approached legal advice and the case has been prepared and never gone any further.
I could see that. I mean, I could see how the people would be scared, too, to say anything.
I've over the years, I've seen Strangely enough as well, some of the corruption I've seen has actually been not in... I mean, UKBFF always got a lot of flack, and I left UKBFF because I wasn't happy with how it was run.
Mm-hmm.
But I judged for him for 4 years, and I never, ever felt I was pressured into judging a certain way.
Okay.
But I didn't like the way they track the athletes. I didn't like the way the two head honchos, which is, for some reason, my main's gone, Bill Turnier and his missus, Wanda. I didn't like how they dealt with people. Bill was a bit of an egomaniac, and he definitely had issues with communicating with people.
Okay.
And there were even moments where he seemed a little bit unstable, but he never influenced me. In fact, he was very, very quick to pull me if he thought I was being influenced by another judge.
Oh, really? Wow.
I was generally quite quick when I judged. If it was, I was always very, very comfortable with the male classes and could judge them quite efficiently and quite well. I always struggled with the female classes. I always struggled to judge the female classes.
Okay.
Not so much the female physique stuff, but when we started getting into body fitness and athletic, I used to get a little bit mixed up as to what I was supposed to be looking at. But a couple of times I finished and I was just, you know, sort of waiting for the slow one on the end to get their score sheet in, sort of thing. And this particular occasion, I remember I was next to the statistician, so all the score sheets were at the side of me.
Okay.
And I'm just gazing around. Bill nearly took my fucking head off.
Really?
He thought I was looking at the score sheets and then altering mine.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, I've already put it in, Bill. I've got nothing here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just gazing around while I wait for her on the end to get it done, you know. Wow. So, but for someone as a person, I didn't find him a particularly nice person at all. Very hardworking, but they're all, at the end of the day, in it for the money.
Sure.
I've met very few people that get involved with that side of things for the passion of the sport. And I don't have an issue with that. You do a job, you should get paid for it. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah.
But at the same time, don't paint it and promote it as anything else. And yet some of the other threads that were very against the UKBFF are actually more corrupt and more bent and blatantly rigging shows.
Hmm.
I got very disillusioned with the whole judging and the whole show, which is why I've not been to one for 4 or 5 years. You hear things, you see things, and yeah, there's always a bit of bullshit, and there's always a bit of a sore loser. It was politics, it was that, it was over. But when you hear a head judge of a show saying to a competitor that, well, if you want to place high, you need to get a greater social media following.
Yeah, that's weird. And I could argue the other way. I think that at least here, I think that sometimes I've seen people think that it was the social media following that got a particular person their placing. Sometimes I think, you know what, the people with great social media followings that are on the national level here, they have a great following because they have awesome physiques. Not only, you know, are they're great to look at. So people follow them, you know, and that's, they're meant to turn pro.
Talking of the UKBF, there were two particular judges in the UKBFF that were bent as fuck and used to rig judging as much as they possibly could.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't rig anyone else's judging, but what they did, they judged systematically between the two of them.
Okay.
Now, 7 to 9 judges, lowest score, highest score, discounted.
Yeah.
But if two of you in the middle of that pack bump somebody up 2 places, that will actually have an impact on their placing.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
they used to judge very strategically for their own athletes. And I mean, I can't stand the pair of them anyway. So it makes, they're a married couple, and most people know who they are. But if not, it's Sean and his missus. I don't give a fuck.
Well, what's out?
I've seen pro shows, and I've seen the head judge at an IBF pro show have this conversation with somebody that this athlete was going to win. What about him? Not his turn. He'll have to wait till next time.
Okay.
And it's just like, I don't want to go to a show where the decision is made that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I've hesitated to get involved with judging because there's a certain amount of ignorance that I have to it. I understand how it works. I understand the people that are judging. I have an idea of what they favor. I just brought up our live thing here. Turn that off. Well, anyway, but I want to almost maintain like the fact that I love the sport still and not get too involved. I feel like you get too involved in the politics. A lot of people, then they end up with what you're saying now, where like, then you just didn't want to go to shows anymore. So part of me not judging has been keeping that distance for myself to keep loving it,
That was part of it. And the other part of it was the diversification, the diversification within the sport. And I'm not for 1 minute saying that bikini isn't justifiable or men's physique isn't justifiable, but I don't enjoy it personally.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And when you're judging a show and 75% of your time in the seat is judging those classes,
right?
Then it's like, I don't enjoy doing this shit anymore.
Yeah.
Apart from all the other bullshit I've got to deal with.
Yeah.
I'm only got 20-25% show I actually enjoy looking at.
Right.
Stuck here for 12 hours.
It's a lot of work too, especially for a big show.
It's just like, no, it's not for me.
Yeah.
I the last show I did for UK BFF was a British fine at Harrogate.
Okay.
And then I left. And then I did one show for the WBF, which was a little independent show. And then I started with the PCA.
Okay.
But never actually judged the show. I left before I judged anything.
I've heard good things about the PCA. I've also heard good things about NABBA, even though NABBA's old school and they don't have like a good social media presence at all. I've heard aspects of both of those organizations that at least intrigue me, and I like the idea that you guys do have options. That was the big thing.
UKBFF did and still run this policy that if you compete with another federation, you're banned from them.
Yeah,
which is pathetic because they don't have the pull that they used to have, and they don't have the footfall to be affording to be that fucking picket.
True.
Every organization has its faults. Every organization's have its problems, some more than others. I'll talk to you off air.
All right. What do you say? We're getting questions in here. Katie, just messaged us asking us, curious to know about every other day protocols for HGH, which is stuff that we have talked about before. But we do have a bunch of questions from the forum, too. What do you say we take a moment to recognize our sponsor, and then from there we could get to our questions? Sound like a plan?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right. Do you need to take a break or anything? Grab any water or anything?
No, I'm good, mate.
All right. Then I'm going to do a live commercial right now. We're going to see how this goes. Because guys, if you are enjoying drugs and stuff, then I implore you to go to crosslands.org.uk. Am I correct on that one?
Yes.
And yeah. I went there yesterday, and I noticed you have a new thing on your website. For $4.99 a month, you can access a bunch of information that you have on the site. You can become a member, basically. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a static content, so don't be thinking you're getting new stuff, because you're fucking not. there's probably 30, 40 articles on drug research, and then there's drug profiles on most of the compounds you're going to experience as a drug user.
Okay.
So it makes a nice little library. Really, the $4.99 gives you a direct access to myself.
Okay.
So for $4.99 a month, you can ask me as many questions as you want about whatever you want, and you'll get answered priority because you're obviously a paying customer.
Okay.
But I used to constantly add content to the website, and I started to find that I was just basically looking for shit to put on there. So I decided to just leave it as is, make it static, use it as a connection portal for information and for asking questions. And I haven't developed from that point, really. I just didn't feel it had enough variety to go further from where it was.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to mention, check out the films Under Construction 1 and 2, James Grelish's movies that were about our guy right here. Actually, you can't see my hands. Now you can. I'm going to go like this. Wait. I'm not on the screen. There we go. Our guy right here, Dave Crossland. Those are freaking phenomenal movies. I think that Under Construction 2, though it was harder to watch, that was my favorite. And guys, if you use the code ADVICES25, you will get 25% off of that. Also, I want to mention True Nutrition.
Are we still doing that? I didn't even know we were still doing that.
I think so. James said he was going to renew it. So I've been promoting it. At the beginning of the year, it expired. And I think he's doing it. So try it out, guys. Try it out. If it doesn't work, then just hassle James Grelish and shake him down, and he'll give you a discount.
Send him lots of abusive emails. Yes. He likes them.
And last but not least, TrueNutrition.com. Check them out, guys. They're the company that I've been using for my protein powders since well before they sponsored us. I've used them since the jump. They've been a company that I've been taking advantage of, using high quality supplements from them, from their protein powders. Right now, I just started their intro workout. I'm using their Matt Porter approved muscle intrusion. It has 25 grams of highly branched cyclic dextrin and some electrolytes in there, along with some essential amino acids. And I'm using a scoop of Pepto Pro with that. And I'm actually really liking it. I'm getting a good pump and good endurance through my longer workouts. So our code there is ADVICES. That's it. Let's get back to this thing. I don't think I've ever asked you about T&E before. It says, question regarding my upcoming cycle. I am planning on running a T&E Prope, Tren Ace, and Equipoise cycle. I'm planning on running 350 milligrams T&E, 350 milligrams Prope, 350 milligrams of Tren Ace, and 600 milligrams of EQ per week. My question is regarding the frequency of the T&E injection, test base in oil. Just to be clear, would it be recommended to do 50 milligrams a day of T&E, or could I get away with every other day injections of 100 milligrams of T&E? There's a lot of conflicting info regarding T&E on various boards and forums. I would greatly appreciate your thoughts on the matter. Big fan and longtime listener. This is Matt Bell, by the way, guys. Matt Bell, longtime listener of the show. What's up, man?
Right, so what we're talking is we've got an oil test base as opposed to a water test base, but the fact is it's still an unestered hormone. So its active life is a matter of hours, which would mean daily.
Okay.
I mean, that's definitely really a drug you're going to use as almost as a pre-workout, because its window of work is going to be very, very rapid.
Yeah.
So the carrier oil is more delivery system. People have turned to oils because there's less chance of the bacterial load. Water was always problematic for bacterial load.
Didn't it hurt a lot too in the water base?
You've almost, the oil acts almost as a buffer and does to a very slight degree slow the impact of the hormone down, but we're not talking in the way of an esterification would do. So, you know, we're not talking it's going to extend it into a day or so. It's still going to be a matter of hours and the job's going to be done.
Yeah.
So it's every day. Yeah, definitely every day. I'm curious as to why he's chosen what he trains for or what he trains in.
I believe in bodybuilding. I mean, I think that bodybuilding is his main focus. I wouldn't be surprised if he is thinking like pre-workout as a boost.
Yeah, it just seems a strange choice of drug to run There's obviously a lot more common in powerlifting and power sports to run a base compound than it is within bodybuilding, but it's not beyond the realms of use. At the end of the day, you're still pumping the hormone into you, you're still going to get a reaction from it.
I think there's more people that are getting into stuff like this with the increased interest in doing more progressive overload in like Jordan Peters style of cycling. I think that people are using this stuff to more times than they used to like push through a plateau. It doesn't sound like Matt has it set up that way. This is just part of his long-term plan. But I have heard of it used more in recent days in bodybuilding. Same with like Halo in the off-season, you know, or...
So basically because you're working on a beat the logbooks of format, you're pumping in anything that's going to boost your strength for that very short period of time in the gym to break through that weight plateau of training.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
There's no real consideration of recovery after that point then.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Right. Stop reinventing the fucking wheel.
Yeah.
Come on, you know. Please, it's not necessary.
I will say this about T&E. I've seen very different responses to it. I had bought I had a source, we'll say, or I know a guy who had a big bottle of T&E, like 100 milliliters of it, and he split that bottle with a friend. So not only was it like the same batch, but it was the same bottle that was split into another sterile vial. One guy really liked his workout effect from it. In fact, one guy had some of the best workouts of his life while he used this pre-workout at about 75 to 100 milligrams. This other guy, he felt nothing. Like, he genuinely felt like nothing was going on. He didn't see any additional strength from it, really. He didn't feel much of anything from it. So I've seen that in a few people where they tell me, like, I don't really get anything. I can't tell I'm taking it. I've seen a few people that like just don't have a great response to that like pre-workout T&E effect that for other people, I can tell you maybe even firsthand that it's worked really well for me in that regard. So I don't know.
Yeah, I find this with several drugs, you know, and I don't think that's just the only one that has that problem in that people just get some very different reactions.
Yeah.
Very, I've seen it with M-Tran.
Well, really, though, at the end of the day, then, would you say, so T&E is not a big suggestion of yours?
No, I wouldn't say that. I do think it has its place.
Yeah.
But it seems to be that people are constantly looking for more complex protocols because the more complex it is, the better it's going to work.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't need to be like that. And the problem is the more compound you add in, the more management becomes a problem, the faster acting a compound is, the more it's going to jump up and down, and you're just not going to know what's doing what.
Okay.
So, you know, as a pre-workout, as a strength boost for training, yeah, base drugs do have a very useful role.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna, you've also got to remember, if you're going to boost performance in the gym, it doesn't matter however you achieve that, that's going to have a payoff on the other side in the fact that you're going to need increased recovery.
Okay.
And it just seems people look for complex answers when they don't need to.
I could get with that. One question he was asking within that, which I think you answered, was can you use it every other day? Looks like the answer is going to be no. You have no.
You can, but you've got to remember that what you're doing is you're putting a drug in your system that's active for a few hours and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, if you use it every other day, then you're going to go a day where you're having no effect from it. Wherever you use it every day, you're going to have that improvement in peak within the gym. But I think he's talking about using it as part of his cycle, not as a pre-workout, which is why he's looking at EOD. In that case, all you're going to do is, for a few hours after you inject it, is you're going to peak your hormone levels.
Yeah.
And yes, that will have an impact and that will improve growth, but it's also going to throw things all over the place.
Yeah.
And you may find sides off the back of that. You may not. It depends on you and how you tolerate drugs as a person. You know, I mean, we were talking about different, I mean, M-Tren. I've used M-Tren at huge doses and got absolutely nothing off it.
Really? I've never touched it before. I've only heard of nightmares, really.
I mean, I've used Itrostren, but I've used M-Tren high doses of pre-workout, got no aggression, got no focus, got nothing.
Oh, no, wait. I take that back. I did use it at a low dose for a short time, and it was the summer. I got terrible side effects, just overheated on that stuff so easily. It's a wicked compound.
I got more kick pre-workout on listening to a song.
Really? Yeah.
Than I got off M-Tren.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
You know, I'd get more out of listening to the right type of music than I would of using M-Tren as a pre-workout. Mm. I got a huge pumps off using Oxy and Anavar pre-workout.
Yeah.
Debilitating pumps to the point where it was like, I can't move my fucking arms. This is pointless. I can't train.
I don't remember. Were you running a lot of orals during UC2?
No.
Yeah, I didn't remember you talking about many orals.
I've always liked oxys. I've always responded well to oxys, but one of my keys to growth was the fact that naturally I'm not strong at all. So okay. If I can improve my strength,
yeah,
I get a much bigger return in size off a low level strength increase than most people do.
That makes sense.
So for me to go from, say, a 3-plate bench to a 4-plate bench, you know, for reps, that will show in a massive increase in muscular size on me.
That makes sense.
And the one drug that always worked really well for strength in me was oxys. Always. They were always really beneficial, and I did use them quite a bit because I always got a good strength kick off them, and off the back of that, then I always got a good growth spurt.
And you didn't get the appetite issues that some people get from those?
But I got to the stage where I had no appetite anyway, and I just ate because it had to be eaten. I didn't want to eat, like eating, but it was just shovel it in. Okay. So I've gone beyond that at that point, really. Okay. Sometimes I've had issues off it, sometimes I haven't. It's varied. It's never completely killed my appetite. It's just made eating a little bit more of a chore.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I got my lab work done. Just a side note, my kidney values are good. I'd been concerned, you know, ever since you and I have talked, and I know your condition, your situation. I've always been thinking like, man, I really got to be careful. I got to really watch myself. So it was a sigh of relief to see that all the numbers looked good.
Oh, well, my kidney function has increased by 2%.
Well, that's a good direction. That's for sure.
I found out today. Okay. I had a hospital appointment today, and it's improved by 2%. Not massive. Saying that, that was actually the results from January. So I've had more bloods done today, and I'll get those results next Tuesday.
Okay.
So we'll see if it's increased any more from that.
And keep me posted. We have more questions here. Once again, guys, we're over at the forum, advicesradio.com. There's a forum button, or you can go directly to forum.advicesradio.com. In the bodybuilding section, there are threads stickied at the top. We are in the drugs and stuff thread. Hi, Scott and Dave. Coming back to a diet in time to hold the weight. On TRT only, would a cycle of test and Masteron and DHB be a good way to gain mass, but A, avoid water retention that has historically caused high blood pressure, and B, avoid the use of DECA as it causes anxiety, and my personality really wouldn't suit Tren. Cycles before have never passed the 700 milligram total. So plan would be to run 300 milligrams of Sustanon, 200 mass, 200 DHB, diet clean and will bring calories up accordingly, and cardio at 20 minutes post-workout 4 times a week. So it said, he's saying he's on TRT and he's considering running these 3 compounds to gain mass but avoid water retention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it a bad stack, to be fair, especially, I mean, obviously water retention generally is down to mismanagement of drugs rather than anything else, because you're not controlling the female counterparts, and that's why you're getting water retention. But if he can't run DECA because of anxiety issues, which it does cause, and then he's definitely not going to be looking at Trend like he says, because that will just basically destroy him. So it's not a bad choice of drugs at all. I don't see any problem with that at all. Just remember to factor in his TRT dose as well, because he won't be running 700. He'll be running 700 plus his TRT.
Okay.
If he's going to continue with his TRT in the background, because obviously normally our natural levels are suppressed, so what we put in is what we're taking. But if you've maintained TRT in the background, don't forget to factor that into your calculations, especially when you're talking about estrogen management.
I'm guessing he's just going to start, when he starts the cycle, I think he's just going to use the 300 sust. I could be wrong on that, but I think he's going to, you know, stop the TRT.
I mean, that's quite a mild dose. DHB, it seems to be quite a Marmite drug.
A what drug?
A Marmite drug. Right. You've heard of Marmite, have you not?
No.
Oh, God.
I don't know what you're talking about here.
Englishifying yourself.
I'm trying.
Marmite is a yeast spread. And it's a very distinct flavor, and it's very much one of those things that you either love it or you fucking hate it. I personally hate the stuff, think it's vile, but, and DHB is one of those drugs, you either get on with it really well or you don't get on with it at all.
Yeah, so I've used it, and I felt like I needed more. Like, I felt 200 milligrams was pretty light. Like,
but this guy seems to be a very low-end user anyway, so it's got to be relative to your previous experience as well. I mean, it's still quite a powerful version of the compound.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a good point, isn't it?
I mean, I wouldn't put anyone for a first time on above 300 milligrams a week.
Okay. Plus, he has those other 2 compounds in there. How about, what was the other thing he was suggesting? Was it, or thinking about using Masteron? Do you think you should even have Masteron in a bulking cycle? Does that matter?
It's a DHT. It's still anabolic. It's still going to increase overall anabolic levels. So, yeah, it's going to add to the overall growth factor. I mean, it's very much a poor man's primo.
Yeah.
But in that, I mean, primo is, if you want to go a very mild approach to your bulking cycle with as lowest levels of stress you're going to place in your body that you can from the chemicals you're using, then obviously primo is a very good choice. So Master is just a step up from that in that sense. So, yeah, it's a nice mild drug. It does add a little bit to the cycle. We'll add an element of estrogen control to the cycle as well, and well, all female hormone control to a degree. Because it does block progesterone receptors as well. It doesn't lower progesterone, but it does affect the receptors, and it does have a little bit of an impact on the reaction to prolactin too. So it's not a bad little addition, to be fair.
Okay. I don't mind it. I don't mind that at all. I feel like I kind of can get the same type of effects as I would have from, say, adding in Proviron, but not then in a way. I feel like it ends up being cheaper than running a bunch of oral Proviron on the cycle. You know, I feel like it gives me a libido boost, keeps my muscle looking a little harder.
You're also probably talking a relatively safer administration method as well.
Okay, you think?
You're not having to go that oral digestion route.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things with bulking, and one of the things that often people have problems with, and I've had a couple of clients recently that have really been struggling with this, is with stomach issues.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and digestion, and it is if you can't eat and you can't digest food, then you're not going to recover and you're not going to grow in a bulking cycle. So you've got to always remember that there's no point taking more and more drugs if the downside of that is you're not going to be able to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of like where I was going with the Anadrol in that previous question or so.
Yeah,
because man, it kills my appetite. I just got to the point with that where I'd have to say, hey, I can't eat anymore. So how can I grow anymore?
Have you tried the injectable version?
No, but I have used oral versus injectable Dianabol, and I found that over a period of time, Dianabol would slow my appetite down, but the injectable would not. It just felt, it's like cleaner would be the word I would use, just a cleaner feel.
There's two ways that the Anadrol can affect appetite, and obviously the first and most direct way is it just basically irritates the stomach.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the chemical passing through the stomach and everything else, and it just irritates everything and causes it to bloat a little bit. But the other way is that because Anadrol is specifically efficient at increasing RBC, it puts greater load on the liver. And if the liver is overly stressed, that will affect appetite and stomach function as well.
Mm.
So it's sometimes worth a blood test to see what mechanism, or as much as you can, what mechanism is causing the problem. And if you see that its blood values are reasonable and liver function's reasonable, that the most likely is that it's just upsetting the stomach, then the injectable version would be a very fair alternative.
Yeah.
But if your RBC is sky high and your liver's going, ooh, fuck off, I don't like you, then I don't think the injectable is going to make any difference whatsoever.
I'm going to pull a question that we just got here. Let's see. I'm going to move it over to the side here. He says, what would happen if I took triptorelin but kept taking a TRT-type dose of testosterone? My aim is to stimulate FSH and LH so I can increase my sperm count, which is low at the moment due to being on. Stopping TRT is not an option.
Then take HMG.
HMG would be a better option?
Oh, far, 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 far more.
Okay. What do you know about triptorelin for recovery purposes? I'm scared of it. I know that you can basically shut yourself down for, you can castrate yourself, right, with it if you use too much.
You can, but we're talking a 200 micron gross to reinvigorate and a 2.5 milligram dose to castrate.
Okay.
There's a big difference there, Scott.
Yeah, that sounds fair enough. Okay.
The thing is with triptorelin, is you're going to stimulate natural FSH and LH production.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're on, like in this case, because he's on TRT, he's permanently in a state of shutdown. So he's effectively trying to drive with the park brake on.
Mm.
Whereas HMG just mimics FSH and LH.
Okay.
So it's not trying to find a pituitary and get that to start producing FSH and LH again. What it does is it replicates those signaling hormones in the testes.
Okay.
Causing the Sertoli and the Leydig cells to activate. Obviously, in the case of the Leydig cells, they won't produce testosterone because localized inhibins will continue to send a signal to shut down.
Mm.
But that isn't happening with the sperm side production of things.
Okay.
So the FSH element of HMG is going to stimulate the Sertoli cells, and that is going to start to get that side of things moving. Where if he tried to run TREP, he's trying to stimulate pituitary into producing those two hormones when the pituitary's got a constant signal for shutdown sat there. So it's constantly being told, don't produce, don't produce, don't produce, and then you're putting introduce something that's saying produce, produce, produce. And there's a strong element of cancellation there.
Mm.
But it's nowhere near as going to be effective for what he's trying to achieve as just removing that part of the whole process and just putting a mimic straight into the testes that will trigger the response he wants within the testes.
Okay. But once he stops using that, that'll be it. He's going to go back to
he's going to go back to his infertile state to some degree.
Okay.
It's something I haven't seen enough research on to be able to say how far one way or the other.
Okay.
HMG is commonly used in fertility for the exact reason we're talking about. And I do know a few cases where fertility has remained reasonable post-usage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely something that goes on with testosterone and those cells. I've seen numerous blood works where FSH and LH are 0.3, which is basically your standard measure for shutdown.
Okay.
0.3, you shut down, job done. That's it. They ain't producing. And yet the individual has remained a fairly healthy level of sperm production. So obviously the elevated hormone levels within the bloodstream are having an impact within the testes and in the production of sperm directly in some way, but I honestly don't know how.
Okay. He has a follow-up question here. How long would it take HMG to start its magic? Basically, if he starts using it, I mean, he'll get an instant response, right? I mean, it's going to start working immediately.
Yeah, it's nigh on instant, yeah. It's not something that has to build in your system. It may take a while for those levels to build up to a point of view where you're seeing an improvement.
Yeah.
But its initial sort of info, it's like a hormone, you know. I mean, when you introduce test into your system, your levels peak within 36 hours, 24 hours, depending on the ester. But you're not going to see a major change in your body response for a few days at least.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to cut it off here, Dave, or do you want to do one more question? How you doing on time?
I'm good for time either way. I don't have to be out of here. Oh, shit. No, I'm not good for time. Yes, we'll have to cut it off.
in that case, we will come back to this. Guys, here's what I would love for you to do. Head over to the forum, forum.advicesradio.com. If you go to the bodybuilding section, there are threads stickied at the top for all the shows. This show is drugs and stuff. Post some questions up there for us, so it'll give us some cool topics to talk about and discuss. We will be doing this again next week. So Dave, you got to get out of here. Your daughter, for follow-up, she's gone now, right? She went to her new job with the amusement park.
She's now up at Flamingo Land working on, she does daytime and in the park and those sort of areas, and then she does a couple of nights a week in the nightclub as well there.
Okay, awesome, man, awesome. And you're in the middle of a busy day still, so we will. She's what? Did you say something?
She's settling in.
Oh, good.
I said she's settling in. Yeah.
In that case, Dave, we're going to let you go so you can get back to your busy day. I know you have a lot of stuff left. Thanks for taking the time as always to join us here.
Pleasure, as always.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. Go to Dave's website. It's in the show notes, as well as check out his YouTube. You can watch this on YouTube. You can go to iTunes, anywhere else you want, anywhere that has podcasts. We have the audio version, advicesradio.com. We will see you soon, guys.
Voices Radio Network.